You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. There's a fair amount of big news, but one of the biggest of the big news is right now is that let me back up a little bit. Over the weekend, I was at a meeting in Denver, and without going into all the whole long details, there was a conversation about net neutrality, and one of the more outspoken advocates of net neutrality came in and talked to our group, and it was like the consensus was we need to go for what's called Title II reform, or regulation of the internet as a common carrier. And in fact, we need to go even beyond that. We need to go to open access. And now what Title II common carrier means is that the internet is regulated the way your telephone service is. Your phone company cannot charge you based on what you're talking about. They can't listen to your conversation and say, you know, he's having a business conversation. I think we'll charge him 10 cents a minute. Or, you know, another call, well, it sounds like she's talking to her grandmother. I think we'll charge her 3 cents a minute. They can't do that. It's against the law. It's against the regulations because they're a common carrier. Regardless of what they're carrying, regardless of the content, regardless of where it comes from, who it goes to, it's the same price. Unless it's, you know, outside the United States, in which case they can charge a premium for it. So this is the way to do it with the internet, to say, you know, your internet service provider, Comcast is providing your internet. They can't look at what you're downloading and say, you know, he's downloading Netflix. I think we'll charge him extra. And by the way, over the weekend, Netflix just cut a deal with Comcast to pay them millions and millions of dollars to have free access to your home, or not free access, to have high speed access to your home. This is wrong. I mean, this is just, you know, plain old flat out crazy. And that's on the kind of wholesale end. I mean, that's Netflix paying for back-end big pipe access. But at the local end, this is where it's really going to hit Americans. And now on top of that, we've got 19 states, if my memory is correct, that have passed laws making what Chattanooga did illegal in their states. Chattanooga, Tennessee, built out their own citywide fiber optic system for high-speed broadband. And they've got the fastest high-speed broadband in the country. There are companies moving to Chattanooga specifically because of this. The people there are more engaged. This should be a civic responsibility. But in 19, say there's this ALEC legislation that the Koch brothers and the big telecom companies have sponsored that has been adopted now in 19 Republican-controlled states that say it's illegal to do what Chattanooga did. You can't have a community-owned broadband service. It has to be owned by a for-profit corporation where some billionaire can make a buck off it. So anyhow, the holy grail in net, there's actually two. One is this open access. That means that any internet service provider can access, you can take your choice of hundreds of different internet companies. And if you have your broadband through Comcast cable, Comcast has to step aside and let that particular, whichever company you pick, be your internet service provider. They can charge that internet service provider a small fee for the use of their copper, but they, you know, of their cable into your house. But you have to have multiple internet service providers. That's not something that the president has come out in favor of, but I'm hoping he will. By the way, Jim, do you have those pictures? This was incredible. I was at this, like I said, I was at this conference, and then I'm going to get to the president's clips on this. I was at this conference over the weekend in Denver, and it was a board meeting for a group that I'm on the board of. It's called Vocal, voqal.org is their website. And on the table, it was at the Hilton, right, or a Hilton in Denver. And on the table were these little candy bowls, you know, like they always put on – and the candy was Mary Jane and Laffy Taffy. And I'm like, And you know, walking around Denver, I'm smelling pot everywhere, not everywhere, but in a few places. And one of the members of our group went to the pot store and got some legal pot. And, you know, a few of us got together one evening when there wasn't Saturday night and tried it out. It's not as strong as everybody says. It was like, okay, this is like when I was 18. Anyhow, the candy in front of us was Mary Jane and Laffy Taffy. And I'm like, whoa, they're putting edibles on the table? Really? Turns out this is just candy with interesting names, but in Denver, I just thought it was fascinating. Anyhow, back to the internet. Here, clip one. Here is what President Obama had to say. This just went up on the whitehouse.gov.
The idea of net neutrality has unleashed the power of the internet and given innovators the chance to thrive. Abandoning these principles would threaten to end the internet as we know it. That's why I'm laying out a plan to keep the internet free and open. And that's why I'm urging the Federal Communications Commission to do everything they can to protect net neutrality for everyone.
So there you go. Free and open. Now, I don't know that he means open like I'm talking about open, but at least, you know, no more fees. And in fact, here's the details. This is clip number two. He lays out.
They should make it clear that whether you use a computer, phone, or tablet, internet providers have a legal obligation not to block or limit your access to a website. Cable companies can't decide which online stores you can shop at or which streaming services you can use. And they can't let any company pay for priority over its competitors.
Actually, under current law, they can. But he's saying they shouldn't be able to. Here he is talking about Title II. And this is the magic phrase, and you don't have to be a telecom wonk to memorize this. We want Title II common carrier status. This is the telco language for it, so that your cable company, just like your phone company, can't listen in on what you're doing and charge you different prices or give you different speeds for it. Here's the president.
To put these protections in place, I'm asking the FCC to reclassify internet service under Title II of a law known as the Telecommunications Act. In plain English, I'm asking them to recognize that for most Americans, the internet has become an essential part of everyday communication and everyday life.
And then finally, he points out, you know, the FCC, I can't tell the FCC what to do. There's equal numbers of Democrats and Republicans on it, if my recollection is correct. Or is it five? Is there one? There's one more Democrat than Republicans. That's right. Tom Wheeler is the chairman, a former telecommunications lobbyist for what, Comcast or Verizon. He was one of those companies, which is kind of the bad news. But anyhow, here's what the president had to say about the FCC.
The FCC is an independent agency, and ultimately this decision is theirs alone. But the public has already commented nearly 4 million times asking the FCC to make sure that consumers, not the cable company, gets to decide which sites they use. Americans are making their voices heard and standing up for the principles that make the internet a powerful force for change. As long as I'm president, that's what I'll be fighting for, too.
So, you know, this is great news. This is a big deal. By the way, later on in the program, Dr. Elena George is going to be on. We're going to debate Obamacare. And in our third hour, Lori Wallach is going to be here about TPP, the president now calling for SHAFTA to be passed. And, you know, this is like he's making Bill Clinton mistakes. Bill Clinton was the one who brought us NAFTA and CAFTA, or at least NAFTA. I think CAFTA was under Bush. And now Obama wants to bring us SHAFTA. And the American people, I think, by and large, don't want this stuff. But the big corporations do, which is really tragic. My final question, as I said, I had a wonderful time in Denver over the weekend. I wanted to go down and visit the legal pot store, but I was in these meetings all day. And it turns out that because they're state regulated, they have to close at 7. So I thought we could drop by after we had dinner, but they were closed, so I didn't. But, you know, a friend of mine did, and I tried out the local weed, and I did inhale. And it was pretty good. I was wondering, have you ever had the experience of visiting legal pot in the United States?
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And what's it like in these legal pot stores? I'm still curious. We'll be back 15 minutes past the hour. Welcome back. 15 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. And Jared watching Free Speech TV on the cable system there in Burlington, Vermont. Hey, Jared, what's on your mind?
Tom, yes, two things. I'd like to just, you talked about Chattanooga as having, you know, municipal telecom. Add to your list Burlington. It also has it.
Right. Thank you.
What I wanted to talk about was the Obama's trip to China, which you'll be talking about later on. My take in the paper in the New York Times today, an article by Mark Lander, Clinton had NAFTA and Bush had SHAFTA, Bush had CAFTA, and Obama would like to have SHAFTA.
Right.
I think a lot of your listeners may not know what SHAFTA stands for.
It's an acronym I came up with that stands for Southern Hemisphere Free Trade Agreement. Hemisphere Asian Free Trade Agreement, SHAFTA. It's also known as the Trans-Pacific Partnership, PTP.
Yeah. Well, actually, Tom, I think I called in about SHAFTA because it's something I think I invented. But anyway.
You invented it. Okay, great. Jared, let me acknowledge you. I knew it was one of my listeners who had suggested that. It's my apologies.
Well, I don't know, but it just occurred to me that's something that, you know, we ought to be thinking about, and I'm glad that later on in the program you're going to be talking about it, because according to the article in the Times today, Mr. Obama is meeting with U.S. business types who want to trade with China, which is really fine, but I think part of the conversation should be talking with labor.
Yeah.
And I will look forward to your conversation in the third hour. But I just wanted to crank that in because I think, it's not something I think we're looking at or watching very carefully. And suddenly it's going to become law.
Yeah.
And I think I would hope that someone might, the next time you talk to the president, point out to him.
Yeah, good luck on that, Jared. But
my
personal prediction is that SHAFTA, at least Fast Track Authority, will be passed in a lame duck session, and that in all probability SHAFTA will be as well. That this will happen.
I'm afraid you're right.
Yeah, this will happen in the dark hours, just before Christmas Eve, or just before, most likely, or just before Thanksgiving. Probably Christmas Eve, though.
Well, Tom, thank you very much.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Enjoys listening to you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you, Jared. Thanks for the call. Very interesting. Burlington. Oh, I should have asked Jared how the community cable is working out in Burlington. I know in Chattanooga, it is just absolutely kicking butt. They're doing a great job. It's really fast. It's really high speed. It really works well. So this is something, I mean, if point of government is to administer and provide the commons to allow both society and business to prosper and flourish. What more important community function than providing everybody with high-speed internet? This is done, you know, by municipalities, by states, provinces, counties, federal governments all over the world. Why not here? 20 minutes past that. Nobody seems to be calling in to share their... Steve has an experience buying pot in Colorado. I'm looking forward to talking to him about that. I just have to say, I got the best night's sleep I've had in a long, long time Saturday night. One of the things that was really interesting, the Denver Post now has... You know, they've got a restaurant reviewer, and they've got a wine reviewer. They now have a pot reviewer. I'm not making this up. They have a guy. He writes these columns like, you know, it has a beautiful little crunch to it, and it smells like green and piney, and it's more of a head high than a body high, you know, all this language that I apparently was not a particularly sophisticated pot consumer when I was a kid, or I wasn't a kid. I was when I was a young adult, and. Or our selections were far more limited. But, you know, you're getting pot without the pesticides, without the herbicides, without the, you know, they've got organically, and some kinds are like, you know, this really has a more of a body high. The another one is very head high. This one makes you kind of giggly. This one makes you kind of tired. It's amazing. All these subtle varieties. I thought it was fascinating. Steve in Englewood, Colorado. Hey, Steve.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
I am well. It's all worn off. You know, that's the other amazing thing. I was fairly stoned when I fell asleep Saturday night. I mean, it was the equivalent of three drinks. You know, it was a pretty good kick. And when I woke up in the morning, I was totally lucid, totally fresh, totally clear, and no hangover. Had that been alcohol, I would have woken up with a headache. Anyway, back to you, Steve.
So anyways, it's an absolutely fascinating experience to go into one of these pot shops.
Uh-huh.
You go to the door first, and you have to be buzzed in because they're locked facilities. And because they're all cash facilities, the government won't let them use credit cards or anything like that.
When the president said that we're not going to enforce the banking laws, that the pot stores started taking credit cards and checks and things.
Negative.
In Colorado, really?
So you've got to be buzzed in. And the guy comes to the door, and he looks just like a security guard. He's got all dressed in black, except that he's got spiked pointy hair, and he's got tattoos, and he's got all that kind of stuff.
But he looks like a ninja.
He does. And he buzzes you in. And then you go, you stand in line. And then you wait to be called up to the check-in. And there's a woman there on the computer, and she enters your information. She looks at your ID. They had right on at the check-in a note that said 10% discount for active duty military or veterans.
Wow.
So I claim my 10% veterans discount.
Uh-huh.
And then you go in and you stand in another line. And then they call you up to talk to your individual bud tender. So you speak to a bud tender.
And so this is like in a restaurant talking to the sommelier. I mean, you don't walk into a restaurant and say, bring me some wine. You say, I'll take the Chardonnay.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you tell the bud tender what you're looking for, whether it's just for fun or whether you have a medical issue and what your medical issue is. And they suggest something just for you.
Yeah.
And you're right. There's the Sativa brand, which is more of the body buzz. And there's Indicus, which is more of the sleepy buzz. And you make your choice, and then there's different things. They actually have the flowering plant, or they have like little hash oil cartridges for e-cigarettes, and you can buy e-cigarettes. They have like a cream if you want a transdermal cream.
One of the people who I saw this weekend is a woman in her, I believe, in her 60s or 70s. Who fell down and injured her elbow, and they took her to the pot store to get something to put on her elbow. And she was this is great. It doesn't hurt anymore.
The last time I was in, I was actually buying something for my 85-year-old mom because she has terrible shingle pain.
Right.
So I said to the bud tender, this is for my mom. This is not for me. This is the problem that she's having. And he says, oh, this is exactly what you need. It will help her. And she said it's been so long that she hasn't been in pain. She forgot what it was like not to be in pain, and now she's not in pain anymore.
So your 85-year-old mother is using legal pot to deal with her shingles pain.
Yeah, absolutely. And she thinks it's great.
That's remarkable.
You could see the pain lift off her face after her first puff.
She was smoking to do that.
She does an e-cig.
Oh, okay. So you're vaporizing, basically.
Yeah, absolutely.
What they call vaping. Do I have that right?
Yep, that's a vape.
It's a whole brand new world. And, you know, now that D.C. has legalized it, we'll see. I mean, it's going to probably take 6 months or a year before anything happens, and Congress can still blow it up. But
I think within 5 years, it'll probably be legal in most states.
I think you're right.
No,
or at least most blue
no
states.
There's no downside to it. There's just no downside to it.
Yeah, nobody's ever died from an overdose of pot. And like I said, you can get quite high on it, and you don't wake up in the morning with a headache. It's it's really quite, and I don't mean this to be an advertisement for pot, but it's just, you know, this is my personal experience. Steve, thanks for sharing your story with us. By the way, we're doing a fundraiser all this week for the Hunter School, a school up in New Hampshire for kids with ADHD and autism. Their telephone number is 603-786-2922. I'll tell you about it after the break.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Fascinating stuff. Anyhow, we're going to not just pot. I also want to talk about the Internet. We want to talk about Trans-Pacific Partnership, China, Republicans. There we go. That music will come along sooner or later. Welcome back. Defending America from the Weapons of Mass Deception. Tom Hartman here with you. And so glad to be with you. Hunter School. The Hunter School is the Hunter School and the Salem Children's Village are programs that Louise and I started back in the 70s, late 70s, back in 1978. And originally it was a community for abused kids. And as time went on, the needs of the state changed. And there's been a decrease in direct child abuse, but an explosion in kids having ADD, Asperger's, OCD, autism, you know, the autistic spectrum stuff, by and large. And there's a huge debate about whether ADD is part of that spectrum. But we, you know, the Hunter School takes care of kids from such severe ADD that they cannot function in public schools to OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder, autism, I mean, Tourette syndrome. In fact, Olivia's story. She suffered for years with extreme symptoms of OCD, Tourette's, and anxiety. The phone number, by the way, Jim's going to put it up on the contraption.
I threw that piece of paper away. What did I do with that paper?
Oh, it's on the screen. Okay, 603-786-2922. 603-786-2922. Please call now. We have some Be the Light umbrellas, and there are 25. We have 25 of them that are lighted, and we'll give them with a $100 contribution to the first 25 people to call 603-786-2922, 603-786-2922, with a $100 or larger contribution. This is an extraordinarily wonderful organization. Nobody on the board is compensated. The people who work there are, frankly, poorly paid. It's unfortunate that, you know, that's just the nature of that business. I wouldn't say poorly paid, but the organization is just, it's full of people who are there because they really want to be there. It's just a wonderful, wonderful organization. The website is hunterschool.org if you want to check it out. And Olivia, she has irrational thoughts, fears, and impulses. At times, she has been so violent. She tried to throw herself in a lake. She's thrown locked computers off tables, destroyed rooms, has run in front of cars, has beat up her mom, hurt other people. She's been in and out of crisis centers. She's been hospitalized. She's been in mental hospitals where they tied her down and drugged her. This is a 9-year-old kid. Here's the most recently, she sat in the ER in Boston on a stretcher, nothing else but a chair for her mother to sit in for 2 nights, less than 3 hours sleep in 2 days. Her mom, Heidi, continues to endure a nightmare in getting appropriate and specialized help for her daughter. So, I mean, this is young boys and girls. The kids basically 5 through I think, 12 or 13, something like that. That Hunter School takes in. And it's Hunter as in Hunter in a Farmer's World, my old metaphor for ADD. So anyhow, hunterschool.org, or call them now, please, and make a contribution. This week we're doing a fundraiser for the Hunter School. This is our holiday fundraiser. It's 100% tax deductible. They are a 501c3 organization, a non-profit, genuine nonprofit. And the number is 603-786-2922, 603-786-2922, 603-786-2922. Give them a call and make a contribution. And if you're one of the first 25 calling, you can get a Be the Light umbrella that actually has little lights around the outside that blink on and off. And after that, it'll be T-shirts. We've got Be the Light T-shirts. So lots of cool stuff. 603-786-2922 for the Hunter School. And this is a great organization doing wonderful work with really, you know, very needy children. There, I don't know of any other program in the country that takes kids who are so distressed and just has saved the lives of so many parents and children, you know, giving these kids an extraordinary opportunity. So please give them a call, 603-786-2922. This is the Tom Hartman Program fundraiser for the Hunter School and the Salem Children's Village. And, oh, yeah, Louise just said, in Olivia's case, this little girl that I was telling you about, nobody else would take her. They tried all these placements all over the country. The only place that would take her was the emergency room of the hospital, where they basically tied her up and drugged her. So we were her last stop and the place that she's just prospering. She's doing so well. 603-786-2922. Please call them and make a contribution to support these wonderful kids and the wonderful people who are working with them. You know, the amazing thing is so many of these kids with ADHD, Tourette's, autism, OCD, whatnot, are just brilliant. I mean, they've got really high IQs. And what Hunter School teaches them to do is how to regulate their emotions, how to get their anger, their emotions, their pain under control, and how to interact in the world. The last time I was up there, Louise and I were up there, And this one little girl gave a presentation. She had Tourette's syndrome, which is where people just spontaneously start barking and making noises, and they twitch a lot and all these kinds of things. And, you know, scream obscenities, whatever. And she gave this talk about what it's like to have Tourette's, and she passed out a piece of paper to all of us, and she said, please write down the Pledge of Allegiance. Only every third word, scratch it out and then write it in again. And so we all sat there and we did this and we scratched out every third word and wrote it in. And she says, this is what it's like to having Tourette's. You know, a third of what you say is a mistake. And you have to redo it, re-explain it. And then she said, now crumble it up into a ball and now flatten that paper back out. And we all did. And she said, what do you notice? And somebody said, it's all wrinkled now. And she said, right, it's not the same as it was. She said, that's what it's like being bullied because you have Tourette's. You're never the same afterwards. It's like, you know, I was sitting there with tears in my eyes. This little 10-year-old girl telling me the experience of her life. It's amazing. Just amazing. 603-786-2922 is the phone number for Hunter School. Please call and make a contribution now. Back to, we got all kinds of stuff here. Joel in American Fork, Utah. Hey, Joel.
Well, actually, I moved to Park City, but it's still
okay.
The same area. But
close enough.
Yeah.
You're a Colorado native?
Yeah. Colorado native. Grew up in Monument, which is kind of just north Colorado Springs. We have an office in the Denver Tech Center, the company I work for. I'm a industrial engineer specializing in automation. Mm-hmm. When the Colorado law passed, one of the deals that they did to get it to pass, to get a lot of the chambers, the Colorado Chamber of Commerce, to agree to it, was that it still kept intact the employer discretion of terminable offenses. If you, like our company, we have a zero tolerance policy for drug tests. We're tested at random. I'm tested random 3 times a year, have to go get blood. They run the standard can, pot, THC content, that's part of it. So if it shows up, I'm done.
Right.
Our office in Colorado has the same policy. And while I support it for, in my world, with the engineering, you know, people make mistakes, people die.
Right.
I don't like this kind of one-size-fits-all policy. And, of course, different companies are allowed to interpret it different ways. But I think this is something, especially with the war on drugs, in my opinion, it's a waste of time. I do approve of the Colorado law. I don't think it's all roses and sunshine like everybody's kind of been reporting on it. There's been a few other reports that have come out that said there's some hiccups. I still like it better than the alternative.
Yeah. Which was, you know,
the actual employer discretion is, I could see being a huge problem in the future, especially as we go across the states and saying, okay, what's this group going to do? What's this lobbyist group going to do? And I think it, anytime you get to the struggle legislation, it handicaps it.
Yeah. Interesting. Joel, thanks for the heads up on that. I didn't realize that in Colorado companies can still fire you for having THC in your blood. Do they fire you for having alcohol?
If you show up to work and it show, I can't speak to all of them. Our company just has a zero tolerance policy towards anything. If you show up drunk, if you've got alcohol, if you've got amphetamine,
tobacco.
Not tobacco.
Right.
But it's a standard can, whatever that includes, and alcohol, of course, is one of them. So
right. Alcohol stays in your system such a brief period of time. I mean, 24 hours later, it's probably unmeasurable. Whereas pot, because it's not, you know, THC is fat soluble, not water soluble, or more fat soluble than water soluble. It stays in the body in measurable amounts, not enough to get you high, but enough to notice in the bloodstream for, what, weeks, isn't it? Or days, anyway?
I think it's up to 2 weeks or something. We did a little bit of research wondering whether or not it would be better to close our office in Colorado. Found out it wasn't, especially with trying to relocate and everything. But
yeah.
It's been one of those – it's like I said, it's one of those things that I think in the future, as it gets more and more widespread, it's going to have to be sorted out.
Yeah.
And just with the one-size-fits-all, I don't really care if a waiter smokes pot as long as he's good at his job. What's this going to mean for our schools? What's it going to mean for the public school teachers? What's it going to mean for charter school?
Well, it's an intoxicant. I mean, you want to deal with it just like any other intoxicant. You can't be driving. You can't be working when you're intoxicated. That's pretty straightforward. Problem is measuring intoxication. That's the big challenge. Joel, thanks for the call. We'll be back. It's 15 minutes before the end.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
The number for the Hunter School, 603-786-2922. Give them a call. Make a donation with $100 or more. You get an umbrella, a Be the Light umbrella. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Michael in Denver. Speaking of Denver. Hey, Michael, what's up? Thanks for watching Free Speech TV.
Well, good morning, Tom. I just wanted to I wanted to call in. You had Steve from Englewood here a couple of callers ago. the being able to use a bank or major credit cards or debit cards had been allowed for about 6 or 8 months. To Justice Department after the feds basically said that they were going to more or less not go after, you know, not chase after the medical marijuana, you know, establishments in the states where it was legal. They're going to loosen up a little bit. The banks decided, or some banks decided to accept drafts from credit cards and debit cards from establishments. It's gone back very recently, over the last week or so.
Really?
Gone back to cash only, which impinges the convenience of the medical marijuana patients and also the providers to be able to do.
Now, you're talking about medical marijuana or recreational marijuana? Because what I was experiencing in Colorado over the weekend was recreational pot.
Medical marijuana also.
I see. Okay. That, are you talking about just Colorado? Or?
I have a red card. This is Colorado. This is right here in Metro Denver.
Right.
They were told that the systems were going to come down, and they did not give them a date when their systems were going to come up again,
right.
Visa, MasterCard, and all. And again, it's a two-sided coin because you have people that are going to these clinics with money and you have the establishment itself. So it's increased their cost. They have armed security now,
right.
You know, legitimate companies, guys that have permits. Not just
so you hire Brinks, charity, basically.
Yeah, Brinks, Pinkerton,
yeah.
Kind of thing. So it's gone back a step, and I think Mason Tavert out here said that, you know, they're going to address this immediately because there was no real reason other than, I guess, maybe a shift in the political wind. I don't know.
Yeah.
That's what's happening here presently, and I have a red card. Now, I'm 63 years old. There's a lot of vets to go there myself. Mm-hmm. And it's making it a little tougher for us. So thanks very much, folks up at the federal level. And some of the lobbyists, as you said, that are here within the state that would like to completely do a 180-degree turn and go back to the days of prohibition, control, and locking people up for something that...
The private prison companies are still pushing to end pot legalization.
And Colorado is a big state for that also. Corporate private prisons and all. They just love, the gentle people that will roll over and go in for, a few weeks, months, or whatever.
Amazing.
So it's just something to keep in mind.
Got it. Michael, thanks for the call. Thanks for the information. I'm learning every day. It's and it may be relevant to Washington, D.C. one of these days. So we'll see. 10 minutes before the end. 303-786-2922 for the Hunter School in Salem Children's Village. Please make your contribution. 10 minutes before the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Our fundraiser. We're doing our annual holiday fundraiser for the Hunter School in the Salem, the New England Salem Children's Village. And the website is hunterschool.org. The telephone number is 603-786-2922 to make a contribution, to make a donation. And please call now and help out. This is a group that really really needs the help, but B is just doing spectacular work. And I think more important, but, a very interesting, in addition to caring for kids themselves, Hunter School is a model for other programs all around the country and around the world. Our goal is no less, no smaller than to change the world, to change the way that kids with autism, with Asperger's syndrome, with OCD, with ADHD, to change the way that these kids are taught, to change the way that they are treated, to help give them back their lives, to acknowledge that there are upsides to these so-called disabilities as well as downsides, and how to deal with both, how to help them be everything they can be in their lives. Hunter School is just doing amazing, amazing work. Maybe you saw the Lisa Ling documentary on the Oprah Network. I think there's a clip of it over at the website, hunterschool.org, where Lisa Ling went up there and spent a couple days. And it's just an amazing organization. 603-786-2922 is the number for Hunter School to make a contribution. The first 25 people who contribute today with more than a $100 gift, $100 or more, will get a lighted, as in little blinky lights, Be the Light umbrella. So if you'd like to be the light, give them a call. Jenny in Mount Vernon, Washington. Hey, Jenny. Thanks for calling.
Well, yes, I wanted to talk to you about my experience here in going into a recreational pot store. In Washington State. I think, again, I've not been to Colorado. It seemed like they had their act together much better than Washington. I don't know why it took us so long here, whether it was a bureaucracy or what. But I think that they lost a tremendous amount of revenue, and they're just being very, careful. Like, I think Seattle just got their first pot store a few months ago.
Yeah.
But also, your listeners, and when I went there, I've only been once. They couldn't be nicer. And, I joke with my husband about, I wonder if we're going to run into some of our neighbors here. But anyway, they couldn't be nicer and more helpful.
Mm-hmm.
But also, your listeners need to, and I'm sure you remind them of this all the time, but the states that don't have legalized pot, which is most of them, the lobby for the drug industry and keeping marijuana illegal, it's so powerful. And I'm amazed that four states now have legalized it and the District of Columbia.
Yeah.
And The Nation did an excellent cover piece on it about 3 or 4 weeks ago. And in there, they specifically addressed the lobbying groups that are out there. And it's one of the Kennedy cousins or one of them that represents this group, and they have a real vested interest. And also Anthony Bourdain on CNN last night, I know most people think that he does cookings and things like that. But he also used to be hooked on heroin, and he went back to or a heroin addict, and he did a thing on Massachusetts and what has happened there with and how people, a lot of them get started because they're prescribed narcotics with oxycodone, which to me is really deadly. Much nobody dies.
Oh yeah, well here's one of the interesting things, Jenny. I mean, the preliminary numbers look like in those states where there is certainly legal marijuana, medical marijuana, that overdoses, deaths from taking oxycodone and other narcotic drugs have gone down. Because people are turning to pot for pain relief, and you can't overdose on pot.
Exactly. And there are also forms of pot that I think one is called CBD. It stands for cannabinoidal oil, where they've taken all of the, the part that gets you high has been sort of bred out of it. So it provides a lot of pain relief.
Right. It's cannabidols rather than cannabinols. Yeah.
Yeah,
D instead of
and but also the medical stores are different than the recreational stores,
which makes
so,
sense.
So I haven't gone into the medical, but I intend to because I want to buy some of the CBD to treat some pain that I have, and this was recommended from a friend of mine that has rheumatoid arthritis, and so this is something that I'm very, very interested in. It's not only that, but I think that they have finally, I do believe, are going to allow hemp to be grown in the state of Washington, which I certainly hope so, because it is a miracle plant, and it is a crime that hemp has been outlawed in this country for as many years as it has been, along with marijuana.
Yeah.
So there you go. I mean, it's got to get better.
Yeah. Jenny, thanks a lot for the call. It's great to hear from you. Ed in Klamath Falls, Oregon. Hey, Ed, you wanted to talk about the free trade agreement that the president is over in Asia flogging? Shafta?
Yeah, Tom. I think you're failing to look at the bright side. I think that once we have these corporate courts that the country of the United States could be hauled into, that if you're an alcohol producer in Brazil, you could take the United States to court for providing alcohol subsidies to the corn growers, and you could put a stop to all those alcohol subsidies.
Right.
And then there's the corporate court again. Say you're an oil producer in Mexico, because I think they're about to deregulate that and make it private hands in Mexico instead of a state monopoly.
Right.
So you're an oil producer in Mexico. You take the United States to court for providing subsidies to the Middle Eastern countries in the form of American military protection.
So you're saying that if Shafta goes through, we just need to enlist some colleagues, some aides, some people on our side in the Shafta countries, the countries that signed the Trans-Pacific Partnership, and have them start suing the United States because,
exactly.
we surrender our sovereignty under these trade agreements. So we become vulnerable to being sued by corporations, overseas corporations, have them sue the United States for subsidizing the oil industry. That's a good one, Ed. A bizarre upset. Thank you for the call. I know that you're somewhat tongue-in-cheek, but, maybe Shafta would have some positive outcome. I can't think of one, frankly. So, we've got a caller on the board whose son used to go to the Hunter School. We'll talk with that person after the break. We've got actually a debate coming up, but I'm gonna pick that first.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters: Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com. Total protection. Quicken Loans. Engineered to amaze. And ecowine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at tomhartman.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. We are, this week, we're doing our annual holiday fundraiser for the New England Salem Children's Village and the Hunter School, a school for kids with autism spectrum disorders and ADHD, severe ADHD, Asperger's, these sorts of things. The telephone number is 603-786-2922. And Janice in Eugene, Oregon. Janice, you had a son who used to go to Hunter School?
Yes. I had a son that was at the Hunter School, and it was a wonderful experience for him. We went to the Hunter School as a boarding school, just, you know, not as a state referral or anything. Uh-huh. And the reason why was because he had the ADD, or that's what they said, and my husband tested out for the same extreme ADD, and our whole family. And when we read your books, Hunter and a Farmer's World, and the other books, we finally got that this is not a disorder, it's a difference. And that really changed his life. And
That's great.
I can't thank you enough for starting that. He's now a chef. He's graduated top honors from the Cordon Bleu Chef School, and he's now going for a degree in hospitality management. And his view of being able to see beyond one dimension and being able to handle multiple things at a time, which is what hunters do, or ADD people who are often executives and other things, is what helped him branch out to so many different things. But during school, it's such a one narrow area, like a focus of reciting multiplication tables or something. And he couldn't have that instant recall. And he kept getting put behind, even though he was extremely bright and beyond that. So anyway, your school or the Hunter School encouraged him so much. He has such fond memories of the counselor that worked with him and
That's
help
wonderful.
Them through different issues.
That's wonderful. Janice, thank you for calling, and thanks for the testimony. It's great to have listeners actually call up and say, you know, validate what's going on. Thank you, Janice. And once again, the phone number for Hunter School, and the first 25 people who call with a contribution of over $100 will get a lighted Be the Light umbrella. After that, they've got not lighted Be the Light umbrellas, plus Be the Light T-shirts, and Be the Light, Be the One. The number is 603-786-2922, 603-786-2922. Now, all that said, Dr. Elena George is on the line with us. She's a board-certified otolaryngologist and a conservative commentator. Her website, DR, as in Dr. Elena, E-L-A-I-N-A, George.com. And Dr. George, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Pleasure to be with you.
Thanks for joining us. Let me get this right. You are in favor of repealing Obamacare. Do I have that right?
Yeah, you're correct. I am.
So what would you replace it with?
I would replace it with free market medicine, something called direct pay medicine, which would allow patients and doctors to actually work together, remove the middleman that the insurance companies have become, which are jacking up the cost, decreasing access to patient care, so that we can actually go back to practicing medicine again.
So you want patients to, I mean, for example, the doctor I have here in Washington, D.C. doesn't take insurance. Is that what you're talking about? You just want to be paid cash?
Well, actually, there's another model where it's a subscription-based type of model where you spend a small amount per month, not the thousands that have been touted as concierge medicine, which is almost like having like a Netflix account where it covers everything that the doctor can do in their office. So that's unlimited visits, that's house calls in some instances, that's discounted prescription medication, and discounted labs. So you're actually getting really value for your money.
Right. So if we the people are going to bear the entire cost of our medical expense and we're going to be writing the checks directly to our doctors, which is what you're talking about, only 30% of Americans right now live in a household where the income for that household is enough that they're not progressively every month going deeper and deeper in debt. Mm-hmm. We have, we've gone from 34% of our labor force being unionized down to 7%. And along with that, we've gone from about 70% of Americans being able to make it into the middle class down to below 30%. So what do you say to that 70% of Americans who, you know, pretty much can't even afford to pay off their credit cards when they say to you, what, you want me to pay you rather than being able to get, you know, very inexpensive health insurance through Obamacare?
But they're not getting expensive health insurance. That's the problem. They're paying a lot and getting nothing. There are 200,000 doctors in the United States and growing that don't take Obamacare, and the out-of-pocket costs associated with it are astronomical.
When you say there are doctors who don't take Obamacare, are you talking about doctors who don't take Medicaid or doctors who don't take health insurance? Because Obamacare is not a thing. What the Affordable Care Act does is it provides an exchange on which people could buy health insurance from Blue Cross or Aetna or UnitedHealthcare. Is that what you're saying, that there's doctors that just don't take any insurance or they don't take Medicaid?
That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying they don't take Obamacare because when people come to their office and they think that they're covered, they find out that their out-of-pocket costs are really much higher than they thought. I've actually had patients leave my office because their deductibles and coinsurance, which is part of Obamacare, is $1,200, $1,600, $2,000, and they have to meet that before the insurance actually kicks in.
Right, if you get one of the crappier plans. I got it.
It's not a crappy plan. That's actually how it's set up. It's set up so that the actual out-of-pocket cost is borne more by the patient than it is by the insurance.
But that's, Dr. George, that's nothing compared to these basically disaster insurance plans that so many people had before Obamacare, where, you know, the out-of-pocket is $10,000 or $20,000. I've seen them where the out-of-pocket is $50,000.
They still exist. And under Obamacare, you're actually getting it taken out of your paycheck, but your deductibles have actually gone up. And what they haven't told people is that the actual premiums are expected to go up for this 2015 calendar year.
Yeah, 3%, less than any time in the last 25 years.
As you said in the beginning of your show, our little segment here, people already can't afford to go to see the doctor. And going up 3% is the difference between paying their mortgage, maybe, or their phone bill and going to the doctor.
So your solution, what you would say to the millions of people who now have health insurance who didn't have it before, is, and somebody gets, like, for example, my wife had breast cancer. The cost of her treatment, just the cost of her medication was $100,000. The cost of the surgery, you add it all up, it was well over, you know, a couple hundred thousand, $250,000, and might have been more than that. You would say to her, sorry, tough luck, just write a check to the doctor.
You know, I don't appreciate you putting words in my mouth. That's not what I would say to her. What I would say to her is that she would go to a place like the Surgery Center of Oklahoma, where their prices are online, transparent, which covers the doctor's fee, the anesthetic fee, and the facility fee for a fraction of what the hospital charges. She'd be actually saving money.
So say she could get her cancer surgery for $15,000 instead of for $60,000. And she could get the drug. I mean, this drug is not discounted. It's $100,000. I mean,
yeah. Well, that's also assuming that she can get it, and they don't tell her that it's medically unnecessary. You know, you don't understand. Just because you have health insurance,
you think chemotherapy is medically unnecessary?
I'm not saying that. I'm saying the insurance company. Please stop cutting me off. What I'm saying is, when the insurance companies bear the cost, when they control the purse strings, they change the game. So I may write that chemo drug as a doctor, but it doesn't mean the insurance company is going to cover it. And what we're seeing as doctors is the insurance company coming back and saying what we and the patient decide is not medically necessary, that it's not covered, that it's experimental.
So if you want to get the insurance companies out of the game, why not advocate national single-payer health care?
Because it won't work, because the government becomes the self-pay.
Why does it work in every other developed country in the world?
It doesn't. If you look at the Netherlands, if you look at Sweden, if you look at the UK, it doesn't.
It works spectacularly. I've lived and worked in those countries.
What they're doing is euthanasia, and they're actually now killing people.
Do you believe that, really?
Once you read, it's actually been in the news.
You believe that? I'm sorry, you are deluded.
Oh, I don't think there's a reason to call anybody names here.
No,
Hartman Program.
It's not a name. It's a description. Dr. Elena George, thank you for dropping by. DrElenaGeorge.com is the website. We'll be back. Oh, yeah, they're practicing euthanasia. Give me a break. You know, Switzerland, yeah, but it's a private for-profit clinic. Dignitas is the name of it, or you can go to commit suicide if you want. But amazing. Destiny in Colorado Springs, Colorado. Hey, Destiny, thanks for watching Free Speech TV on the DirecTV. What's up?
Good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, I just thought in favor of medical marijuana. I am, of course, an old hippie, 70 years of age, but I just had 3 weeks ago a double knee replacement. While I was in the hospital, I was on oxycodone and oxycodone, and all I did was sleep. I felt horrible. After getting home, I think it was 3 days, I took myself off all my medications except the blood thinner and used medical marijuana, and I am now walking and doing wonderful.
Yeah, so the medical marijuana was more effective or as effective as the narcotics?
Actually, it was better. All the other medicine did was make me sleep. I felt sluggish. I didn't want to move. I didn't want to exercise. After taking myself off of the medicine and going on marijuana, I had energy, even though I think you experience the pain, but not to the same degree.
My understanding is that there's a dissociative mechanism, that you still are experiencing the pain, but you experience it intellectually rather than emotionally or
exactly.
Viscerally. It's
exactly.
It's like you think
about other things.
Yeah, you can kind of look at it and say, oh, look at that pain over there, but it doesn't overwhelm you.
Yeah, it wasn't that. The pain I felt before was literally felt like I was being hit by the crowbar on a shin bone.
Ouch.
You know, that was the degree of the pain.
Right.
And afterwards, I would still scream when I didn't expect the pain, but I could work through it.
Right.
And I'm real pleased with myself. I'm not walking normally, a little robot-like, but it's 4 weeks well, 4 weeks this Thursday.
Wow.
So I feel like I'm doing, and oh, this is when I went to my physician's assistant, he told me that I was doing better than most people the doctor had done surgery on who just had one knee done.
Wow. Did you tell him that you were using medical marijuana instead of narcotics?
I did. And actually, my PA went along with me because her experience with people going through physical therapy, they don't want to do anything if they're on a prescription.
Right.
But when they go to marijuana, they have the energy to do it.
Yeah. I was talking to my doctor last week. I went in to have just, you know, this every twice a year blood drawn kind of stuff, you know. And she was talking about how a lot of her patients now here in D.C., now that it's essentially decriminalized, a lot of her patients are moving to pot, even though they have to buy it on the street. They're moving to pot instead of narcotic drugs for pain. And because the medical marijuana here in Washington, D.C., you're not eligible for if you just have good old-fashioned garden variety pain. It's got to be like cancer. And
oh, that's too bad.
Yeah, it's very restrictive.
Wonderful state, except for the way we voted.
Yeah. But, there you go.
And we can grow, and I have a nice crop that I harvest a year's worth along with my tomatoes.
There you go. Destiny, thank you for the call. It's great talking with you. We'll be back. It's 20 minutes past the hour. It's our holiday fundraiser. If you want to help change the lives of some children who are, and frankly their families as well, who are facing serious challenges, children with attention deficit disorder so severe they can't function in the schools, children with obsessive compulsive disorder, Tourette's syndrome, Asperger's syndrome, the autism spectrum, neurological challenges. If you'd like to help these kids out, call 603-786-2922. 603-786-2922. 603-786-2922. It's our fundraiser for the Hunter School in the Salem Children's Village. It's a 501c3 tax exempt nonprofit. It's a great organization. You can read all about it at hunterschool.org on their website, and you can go visit them. They're in central New Hampshire. They welcome visitors. It's just an absolutely spectacular program. And this is our charity here on this program, and we're trying to raise a substantial part of their you know, a good chunk of their budget here over the course of the next week. So please call any amount, $100, $500, $1,000, even $20, $10, whatever you can afford is really appreciated. 603-786-2922 or hunterschool.org. You can donate online. So, Andy in Wilmington, Delaware. Hey, Andy, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. During your break, I wanted to ask you a question about Obamacare, but during your break, there was a story that you talked about. It was mandatory vacation.
Right.
And one benefit of that hasn't been mentioned is that it requires cross-training among employees to be able to implement such a policy, which actually adds value to each individual employee, and along with that may increase their skill set. So I thought I'd mention that.
That's a great point. I've seen that here in our business here. We don't have mandatory vacations, but we encourage our employees to take a vacation. And we've now, sure. I think everybody here can pretty much do everybody else's job, sort of, well enough to get by for a week. Anyhow, back to you, Andy.
Okay. Anyway, last week after the elections, I heard Boehner make comments about the fact that Obamacare was destroying the economy. And my question about that is, usually these folks, there's a grain of truth that they stretch into some incredible point. What does he mean by that? I mean, is there any truth?
There's not even a grain of truth to that, Andy. It's a flat-out lie. If they were to repeal Obamacare immediately, the federal budget deficit would go up by $60 to $90 billion. Obamacare is actually keeping costs down for the federal budget, including the Medicaid expansion. The quality of life in the United States would decline because millions of people would not have health insurance who have it right now. I realize it's very glib for physicians to come on and say, well, they could just write a check to me. I don't think most people can deal with that.
That's part of their agenda. The couple of things that they mentioned, the main thing was get rid of Obamacare. It's destroying the economy. And I haven't heard any pushback from that. And that's the story of the Democrats.
Yeah.
They just let that lie.
Yeah. Yeah. That's all the more the tragedy. I mean, the Democrats in this last election should have been campaigning on the successes of the Obama administration, and they didn't. Or at least some of them didn't. Al Franken did, Gary Peters did, Jeff Merkley did, and they all won their elections. Tom Wolf did, he won his election. The ones who said, not me, you know, the Mary Landrews, the Allison Grimes, you know, of the world, they lost. Surprise, surprise. Andy, thanks for the call. Mike in Denver. Hey, Mike, you got a cannabis story?
Yes, I'm a long-time second-time caller.
Thank you.
I shop in the recreational dispensaries on a regular basis, and what I would like to say about it is the experience is very, very professional.
Mm-hmm.
They do have a security guard at the door, they did an audit of the ID checks to see if there was any underage sales going on, and what they found was 100% compliance because they have double ID checks, one at the door and one at the counter. So it's even better that even better ID checks than the liquor store that I manage.
Right. What I just found absolutely fascinating was I didn't get into the pot store because I figured they'd be open late, and it turns out that they're not because they're so tightly regulated by the state of Colorado there.
Other parts of the state, like Pueblo, I want to say the recreational ones are open till 11 o'clock at night.
Oh, really? Oh, that's interesting. A friend of mine who was there in Denver had gone to the pot store. He had a couple of different kinds. He had some cookies that he himself had been consuming. And then he said, he had the sativa and the indica. He says, he was rolling joints from both. And he said, okay, this one's more of a head high. This one's more of a body high. And, as I said, by the time we were done, I just went right to bed and fell asleep and had one of the best night's sleep I've had in a long, long time. I'm a very light sleeper. And no alcohol, no sleeping pills, nothing. I mean, I just slept like a baby. But
they're, it, very, they're
It was interesting how different the high was with these two different, and of course they ended up getting combined, but it was noticeable.
Well, yeah, I mean, the sativa is more of a an upper type of a stimulating daytime smoke, and the indica is more of a nighttime couch lock, which is a sleep type of thing. But they're very consultative when you go in about what you need. The one thing is that there's a big difference in the medical versus the recreational, because the tax on the medical is very low. I want to say like 3% versus the tax on the recreational is 20%. So that's how the, you know, the state of Colorado has generated such tax revenue on this.
Fascinating. Mike, thanks a lot for the call. And, you know, it's interesting stuff. Tanya has an Obamacare experience to share with us. We'll get to that. We've got a pot farmer, and people want to talk about the ACA. Dan Sisson's book. A lot of topics on the board here. We will get to right after the break. Plus, I've got a bunch of stories that I wanted to share with you as well. And don't forget, the president is calling explicitly for internet to be regulated under Title II as
you're commentary. Listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And the phone number for the Hunter School to make your donation now, please, 603-786-2922. Welcome back, Tom Hartman here with you. You've got clip three of President Obama. Just wanted to remind you, the president, the White House, just put this up at whitehouse.gov. Even though the president is in Asia trying to sell them and us on Shafta, he is, I mean, I'm really impressed by this. President Obama has come out calling for the internet to be regulated by the FCC under Title II as a common carrier. What that means is internet service providers, your internet company if the FCC did what the president says, which, and there's every reason to believe that they won't, but if the FCC did what the president, because all these guys in the FCC, like, you know, just like Colin Powell's son used to be the head of the FCC. Now, guess what? He's making millions as a telecom lobbyist. They're all looking, if they vote the right way, they're looking at very large paychecks down the road from these big companies like Comcast and whatnot. So, you know, we'll see. But what the president said was, this is clip number three, classify the telcos as common carriers. In other words, just like your phone company, they won't be able to listen in on your web activity and charge you based on the sites that you see, or make them go faster or slower based on the sites that you see. All traffic, just like on the telephone, all conversations are treated the exact same way. Here's the president.
To put these protections in place, I'm asking the FCC to reclassify internet service under Title II of a law known as the Telecommunications Act. In plain English, I'm asking them to recognize that for most Americans, the internet has become an essential part of everyday communication and everyday life.
Yeah, brilliant. Now, the flip side of that is, if I only had a brain. Time for our if I only had a brain alert.
I have so got brains.
Well, why don't you use them?
Go!
I haven't got a brain.
Dumbest thing ever.
Because I haven't got a brain.
That's the dumbest thing I ever heard.
Oh, if I only had a brain.
Yeah, not having a date is a big problem for a guy named Stephen Ramsey. Apparently, he called 911 in Florida. He called 911 and basically asked the operator out, the dispatcher. And, oh, you've got the audio of it? Oh-ho, here we go.
What is your name?
What's your name?
In a six-minute phone call to 911, 45-year-old Stephen Ramsey told the dispatcher he did not need help. He wanted something else.
You're looking for a date?
Huh?
Hello?
Yeah, I don't think I would call 911 looking for a date.
And that was not his only request. He asked the dispatcher how she felt about handcuffs.
She didn't wear handcuffs.
I'm sorry?
According to deputies, Ramsey called 911 three times from his driveway on Florida Avenue. He first said he was, quote, checking in. You can hear him laughing before he hangs up the phone.
Hello?
Yeah, right. He's in jail now. So, anyway. Or if I only had a brain alert. Back to your calls. Tanya in Chicago. Hey, Tanya, you wanted to talk about Obamacare, apropos of our guest, the physician who is opposed to it?
Yes, absolutely. First of all, I'm a huge fan. I love you. I haven't talked to you in about a year or so. The last time I called, it was Brunch with Bernie, so I had the honor, the high honor of speaking to both you and Bernie Sanders. But just really quickly, without the ACA, I would probably not even have any insurance, and I'm so grateful for it. I do have pre-existing conditions, which is what I was telling the screener. And the ACA became available to me at a time when I was most in need. I was actually going from an employer-based sponsored healthcare policy to being uninsured. And so it came to me at a time when I most needed it. I could not go without health insurance because I do have several, as I said, pre-existing conditions. And if I were able to purchase it on my own, it would have been so astronomically expensive because I, you know, did some price comparisons. I would never have been able to afford it. So I'm most grateful for it. I'm hopeful that myself and millions of Americans who are in similar circumstances, or even worse, some people are worse off than I am, will be able to continue with it. Otherwise, our lives will be in peril. So I'm prayerful that the Republicans will not be successful in trying to overturn or get rid of it or pull it out from root and branch. So I just wanted to tell you my story. And one last thing I wanted to say, I know a lot of conservatives will say, oh, well, hospitals aren't taking it. And in fact, I think your guest made a similar comment. I will say that there was a hospital in my community I was going to for years. And once I purchased the ACA, I have Blue Cross Blue Shield, they are no longer taking it. However, there is a community-based hospital, which is amazing, and I'm very happy with the hospital. I used to take my mom to this hospital years ago. It's a wonderful hospital. They actually use state-of-the-art care for everything from mammograms to pap smears to whatever you need, and so I'm very happy. And lastly, I'd like to say that Obamacare pays for well women care, and someone like myself who really needs that because of my pre-existing conditions, It is amazing. You have to pay no copay or anything like that, and if you did pay a copay, you would receive a check in the mail to reimburse you. So I just wanted to make those comments about it. Keep doing what you're doing. You are an absolute jewel to us as liberals and progressives. Take care.
Thank you. Thank you very much. It's great to hear from you, and I appreciate your kind comments. Claire in Northampton, Mass. Hey, Claire, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I was listening to that woman that you had on earlier as well, and it kind of got me angry that she made these blanket statements about everything without really coming up with any details, which is one thing you're great at. Although I worry when people say, look at all these other countries that have single payer, because it's kind of a pat argument, and I've been researching this because we're trying to get single payer here in Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm.
I lived in Spain for a long time, and they did have a great system. They're now making inroads on it. The private insurance companies over there are starting to grab part of the market,
right.
And the right-wing government that they have there is letting them do that. I just had a long talk with a guy from the Netherlands who said that they have 100% private insurance, but it's regulated by the government.
Right, and it has to be not-for-profit, just like Switzerland.
Right. So it's something that it's just, I think when people say all these other countries have single-payer, it kind of leaves it open to a lot of argument that really shouldn't be there. It's not really about single-payer. It's about the government, which is what everyone's afraid of, the government stepping in and saying, look, we got to put limits on it.
Right. You're right. Then Switzerland, for example, has no national health care system. But everybody in the country is required to have health insurance, and the health insurance companies are required to be not-for-profit. And so in Switzerland, health care costs about half of what it costs here in the United States. We do have a cancer on our health care system. It is the for-profit health insurance companies who are making billions of dollars in profits, and I don't think anybody should be making profits off people being sick.
You know, it's not only off the people that are paying, but the doctors, the providers, They're paying an extra 30% overhead. Just to keep the private insurance companies happy.
Right, just to fill out the paperwork. Yeah, you're right.
And they're data mining for them. They're use, you know, the insurance companies use all this data that the providers give them to keep people off the insurance.
Yeah.
That they don't want on there.
There you go. Thank you very much for the call, Claire. Great to hear from you. John in Eugene, Oregon. Hey, John, what's up?
Yes, good morning, Tom. I speak from a somewhat unusual background in that I lived for 8 years as a teenager on their Iron Curtain country, and then practiced medicine in the U.S. from 1970 on. Now, I have a different take on whether it's called Obamacare or single payer.
Mm-hmm.
to me, it's a win-win in that, let's assume there are 50 million uninsured people in the U.S. They have only one option. They have emergency room-based medical care costing 3 or 4 times what it would cost if the same disease is taken care of initially.
Right.
Now, eventually, the emergency room medicine cost is passed on to taxpayers. Now, since the upper 5% of taxpayers, the wealthiest, as you would call it, account for about 40% of a total federal tax collected, every time a dollar is spent from the tax budget, this upper 5% pays 40% of it. So wouldn't it make sense to give health insurance, the Obamacare type, let's say, to the folks, and at least half of these 50 million would have some sort of health insurance.
Yeah.
They would use.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, until the Supreme Court drilled holes in Obamacare, it was supposed to cover everybody in the country. I mean, you know, it's just the only reason it doesn't, the only reason we still have 50 million people who are without health insurance or whatever the exact number is because governor after governor in red states or state legislatures have refused to take the Medicaid expansion money from the federal government. They still want their citizens to pay their taxes and to have that money go to D.C., but they'd rather it went to California to pay for low-income people in California to have health insurance than back to Wyoming or Texas or Louisiana, Arkansas, fill in the blanks.
Tom, the number of uninsured remains the same, and it doesn't matter whether whether they're insured or not, somebody will have to take care of them. You're not going to leave 50 million people lying in the gutter.
Right.
We'll take care of them, and it's going to be tax money that takes
care
of them.
Well, yes and no, John. We have been leaving 50 million people in the gutter, and according to Harvard University, they were dying at the rate of 40,000 a year. We're now down to 17,000 people a year dying because of lack of health insurance, according to Harvard University. But, you know, yeah, it's in many cases, emergency room care is just, you're absolutely right. It's more expensive, and it's very often too late to be really effective. John, thank you for the call. Thank you for sharing your story with us. We'll be back. It's 15 minutes before the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
It's our Thanksgiving Christmas fundraiser, Hanukkah fill-in-the-blank holiday fundraiser for Hunter School, 603-786-2922. And welcome back, Paul, in Vacaville, California, watching Free Speech TV on DirecTV. Hey, Paul, what's on your mind today?
What's happening, Tom? Long-time listener, first-time caller. Just before I begin, I just want to let you know, about 5 minutes ago, you had a little visitor that was peeking over your right shoulder. It was a little squirrel that was crawling on your ledge.
Really?
Probably hungry and cold. You might want to put some nuts out for it on the ledge.
We're on the sixth floor.
Yeah, there was a little squirrel, literally, over your right, that little, the right pane window, there was a squirrel that was crawling on the ledge, looking in your window.
Amazing. Yeah, Jim and Shane are telling me about it now. I had no idea.
All the years I've been watching, I've never seen that. But
yeah.
Anyway,
Jim, we need to take a clip of that little bit of video and email it to Carl Wolfson, the progressive talk show host in Portland who's afraid of squirrels. He has a squirrel phobia. I got him it's actually a plastic squirrel on a plaque. You know, it looks like a stuffed squirrel as a holiday present. Anyhow, back to you, Paul.
Yeah. So listen, I'm a pot farmer in California, and I have been for about 25 years.
Really?
And there's another side to this. There's the farmer's perspective that wanted to bring to light. I mean, out here in California, it was all, when we're starting to pass the legislation originally, they were always talking about the small mom-pop organization. You know, we want to make sure that you guys are taken care of. But Big Pharma is waiting to get into this business with a lot of money, and a lot of backing. And I'm afraid that that might squeeze out the small mom-pop farmer like me.
Yeah, yeah. So what do you do about that?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I've seen the change just over the last 5 years since the medical aspect has come into play. It's, you know, the dispensaries have conveniently been able to put themselves between me and my customers, and as a consequence, they've been able to drop their prices or their cost ratio on the purchase end, you know, which enables them to increase their profit margins, you know, immensely.
Right. So you were, Paul, if you've been farming pot in California for 25 years, most of that time you were doing it when it was illegal, right?
Yes, and I still am, in essence.
I see. But you're also supplying dispensaries?
Well, you know, it's hard because, you know, you put all this effort and time into producing the best product that you can. Right. And you go to a dispensary and they're like, sure, I'll take it, but I'll give you this. Instead of respecting you as a professional and respecting your craft and talent that you've built up over the years, they're all about getting the product for as little as they can and making as much money off of it at the end. And that's what it's all about. It's all about money.
Welcome to business in America, Paul. I mean, you know. By the way, what kinds of pot do you grow? Are there different varieties that you're growing?
Yes, actually, right now I've got about 5 different strains that I'm growing. And just let me say real fast. There's no difference between medical marijuana and marijuana. There are strains that we grow that are not, that have no THC, like Charlotte's Web. I personally don't grow those strains because there's no money in it for me. But there are strains that you can grow that don't have the psychoactive effect.
Right.
You can make boosters out of and give the patients that need them. But for the most part, pot is pot, Tom. And you know, people don't hear this classification of medical. It's just weed, and it's all about getting high. It's all about making money.
There you go. Paul, thanks for the call. Thanks for sharing with us. We'll be back 10 minutes before the hour. Slightly unbalanced, Tom Harbin here with you. Please call the Hunter School now and make a contribution. 603-786-2922. Any amount will help. Seriously. Any, I mean, $20, $30, $50 contribution. Small contributions, $5, $10. It all helps. This is a great organization that is, shall we say, a little far behind right now on the budget for the year. And this is our holiday fundraiser. By the way, you can give gifts in other people's names. Just let, you know, somebody know, hey, I made a contribution to the Hunter School in your name. That sort of thing. There's a lot of ways that you could do this. So the number is 603-786-2922. The website is hunterschool.org. Victoria Jones with the Talk Radio News Service is on the line with us, brought to you by the American Nurses Foundation, which this Veterans Day week wants every American to know more about treating post-traumatic stress for you or someone you care about. You can visit nurseptsdtoolkit.org to learn more. That's nurseptsdtoolkit. Hi, Victoria.
Hi, Tom.
So, it looks to me like you're in the White House.
I'm in the White House, yes, indeed.
So what's going on?
Well, it's a bit like a morgue here, actually,
mm-hmm.
because President Obama is in Beijing.
Right.
Nevertheless, today he put the full weight of his administration behind an open and free internet, calling for a strict policy of so-called net neutrality, and he formally opposed deals in which content providers like Netflix could pay a lot of money to broadband companies for faster access to their customers.
Well, Netflix just did that. They just paid Comcast like, what, 15, 20 million bucks, something like that?
Yeah. Verizon, I think it was.
Yeah.
So Obama said that new rules under consideration by the FCC, Federal Communications Commission, should adhere to several key principles. No website or service should be blocked by an internet service provider. No content should be purposefully slowed down or sped up. There should be more transparency about where traffic is routed, and no paid deal should be made to provide a speed advantage to some providers over others in delivering content.
Hmm.
Those are the key pieces.
Yeah. And he came right out and said Title II common carrier. That's a
right.
big deal.
Right. And there, of course, has been reaction from some of the biggest broadband companies, swift and negative. Verizon has called the proposal a radical reversal, of course, that would in and of itself threaten great harm to the Internet.
Right.
Consumer groups are hailing the statement. Public knowledge says today the Obama administration expanded its leadership to promote an open internet by supporting the strongest tools to prevent blocking or throttling of internet traffic.
Yeah. Now, it's what do you think the chances are the FCC will go along with President Obama's suggestion?
Well, I think that probably the Democratic commissioners will likely go along. The big question, and possibly would have done anyway, the big question is Tom Wheeler, the chairman. Now, he said that he welcomed the president's input, said he agreed that the internet should remain free and open, but he did not say whether he would fully support reclassifying broadband as a utility. He did say, though, that the FCC would need more time to formulate its rules, and that means you're not likely to get a proposal this year.
Do you think what he really was saying was that if I, Tom Wheeler, as the head of the FCC, reclassify, if I don't reclassify as a common carrier, I will be able to get a $5 million a year job as a lobbyist, but if I do reclassify as a common carrier, I'll probably only be able to make $1 million a year as a lobbyist when I leave this job?
I'm shocked, shocked.
My cynicism?
Such a thing.
Yes, yes, okay. And you live in Washington, D.C. or nearby. Okay, Victoria, what else is up?
President Obama is in Beijing.
Mm-hmm.
He's probably settled down snug now after his Beijing feast. Uh-huh. He attended a banquet tonight. They're 13 hours ahead of Eastern time currently. And he appealed for official restraint in dealing with the pro-democracy demonstrations in Hong Kong. He did it in very measured tones. He said while the U.S. didn't necessarily agree with China about the dispute, he didn't want to see the tensions in the city erupt into violence. Very carefully calibrated remarks, the New York Times calls it. He said, obviously, the situation between China and Hong Kong is historically complicated and is in the process of transition. Our primary message has been to make sure violence is avoided. We don't expect China to follow an American model in every instance, but we're going to continue to have concerns about human rights.
Did the Chinese press carry his comments?
I don't know the answer to that.
That'll be interesting to find.
It will be interesting to find out. He's going to have a very important bilateral meeting with President Xi Jinping on Wednesday. And human rights is something that will come up. Also, the environment will come up on Wednesday, although it's not a major part of this trip. But it will, in fact, come in. And John Podesta, senior advisor to the president who oversees climate change, is part of the delegation over there. But trade is really what this trip is all about.
Yeah. And it's all so the subtext of this whole thing is let's promote SHAFTA, right? The Trans-Pacific Partnership.
Yes, that's right. The Trans-Pacific Partnership. Although China is not a part of that.
Oh, really?
No.
Oh, okay. But
it's
Well, it's the Southern Hemisphere Asian Free Trade Agreement, but it's Asian countries other than China.
Right. They have their own agreement, which has a different acronym, which I can't remember right now. They have a different acronym that they're promoting. The kind of transparency that is apparently called for in the TPP is not something that China could stretch to.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
Why don't, if they're going to call for transparency, why don't they have transparency during the deliberation process?
Well, I think that's a very interesting question. This is something that they have been heavily criticized for.
Yeah.
Heavily criticized for. Talks are bogged down. U.S. and China have major, and Japan have major differences over farm issues at the moment. So we'll see how that works out.
Fascinating. Victoria Jones of the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com, brought to you by nurseptsdtoolkit.org. Thank you, Victoria.
Thank you.
Great talking with you. And once again, the telephone number for the Hunter School in Salem Children's Village, 603-786-2922. Call them and make a donation there. Thank you.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey, friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com. Total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartmann.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartmann Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartmann here with you. Just a quick reminder, it's our holiday fundraiser for the Salem Children's Village and the Hunter School. And with a $100 donation, the first 25, I don't know if they've hit the 25 people yet or not, but the first 25 people get a lighted Be the Light umbrella. And after that, you get an umbrella or a T-shirt, but the lighted ones, they've only got 25 of them. The number is 603, that's with a donation of $100 or more, 603-786-2922. So it's a great organization. They need your help. Lori Wallach is on the line with us, the executive director of Global Trade Watch, the author of The Rise and Fall of Fast Track Trade Authority, the website citizen.org/trade. And I just want to add, in my opinion, one of the smartest people in this town, Lori Wallach. It's always a pleasure and an honor to have you with us. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
So the president came out today and made quite a dramatic statement. Shane has been monitoring MSNBC. He says he hasn't seen any reference to it at all. Of course, they're owned by Comcast. I'm curious your thoughts on what the president said, A, on how the media is dealing with it, or what kind of response there is to it, B, and what the chances of this happening, Title II reclassification, C, are. I'm in my last hour. TPP and TAFTA, the president is in, it's been a long weekend. The president is in China right now, and we'll see where this whole thing goes with the Southern Hemisphere Asian Trade Free Trade Agreement, SHAFTA, also known as the TPP. What's the status of that right now?
Well, there was, of course, another deadline that's been missed, complete TPP. President Obama, as recently as the summer, said this big Asian trade summit in China now would be when they'd finally sign the deal. So for all of us who care about good jobs, safe food, and good environment, it's good news that they didn't make the deadline.
Right.
The scary news is, they apparently, at a meeting of all the heads of state of the TPP countries, made some kind of set of commitments to basically just make a deal. And the thing that's very dangerous is what that means is the different important policy issues that to date have deadlocked the deal, giving the big pharmaceutical companies more rights to jack up medicine prices through longer patent monopolies, undermining our food safety, giving the foreign investors a right to go to the corporate tribunals and raid our treasury through the investor state attack on domestic laws, the ban on buy local and buy American, all of that stuff that's still stuck. What these heads of state, Obama and his counterparts from the 12 TPP nations, basically got together and said, let's skip the details. We all need this deal to get done. Let's just tell our negotiators to do it. And that's when it gets super dangerous.
Yeah.
Because then, to some degree, it doesn't matter what the negotiators, the policy experts, the protesters in different countries have made as clear things that shouldn't happen. The heads of state say, bring me a deal.
Yeah.
And that's where we seem to be right now.
I was real interested after the election, the big headlines on the television networks, as well as in a lot of the newspapers, were, here are the areas where the president and the Republicans might find some commonality. And, of course, one was Keystone XL, but the other was TPP. Or they rarely mentioned TPP by name. They mentioned it indirectly by saying trade. and then the third was taxes. What do you think the chances are that the Republicans are going to push this through on, you know, Christmas Eve, and the president signs fast-track authority to set the stage for TPP?
My sense is that there probably won't be a vote on fast-track in the lame duck session, largely because they don't have the votes.
Right.
And they haven't had the votes.
And Harry Reid has refused to bring these things to the floor of the Senate.
Well, they don't have the votes in the House. I mean, where the fast-track fight really happens is the House. And
oh, really?
They don't have the votes in the House. The fast-track fights always come and go, win or lose, in the House of Representatives. In the Senate, unfortunately, it's typically, unless you have a great majority leader like Reid who says, I'm not bringing it up for a vote, but when there's a vote, it typically passes. The Senate is where, for instance, President Clinton's attempt to get fast-track in 97 and 98 was voted down. Huh. With 171 Democrats and 71 Republicans. So my instinct is they haven't had the votes, which is why they haven't had the vote. That's because Democrats, Republicans, independents alike across the country have gotten to their House members and said, under no circumstances should you give a blank check so that your constitutional power to protect my family against this damaging agreement is no longer available.
Right.
And it's worked. There's been a majority in the House saying no. So I don't see that that's going to change in the lame duck, though we may see a skirmish.
Will that change in the new session?
So then the question is what happens in January. And the real question is whether the Democratic freshmen and sophomore members, many very conservative members, are going to agree with their leadership that the thing they ought to do as a great accomplishment with their new enhanced majority in the House and taking over the Senate is to give new broad authority, delegated authority, constitutional authority of Congresses to the president that the Republicans have been attacking for years as the imperial power-grabbing president.
Right.
So they've got a problem with their own base. Because it doesn't look great to have this guy you've been saying is, you know, a dangerous power grabber to voluntarily give him a bunch of authority. And also, there's a math issue still in the House about whether they actually can pull together the votes. And it will take a huge effort. But I think we should all be ready to hit the ground running, to talk to our new members of Congress. It doesn't matter if your new members are Republican. The core issue is whether Congress is going to preserve its constitutional authority given by the founding fathers over trade that's exclusive to Congress, or if Congress is going to abdicate its role and let the executive branch diplomatically legislate on all the hot button issues, immigration, energy, climate, food safety, financial regulation, medicine prices. That's what's at stake. So even if you're a progressive and you have a now very conservative Republican member of Congress, it's worth going to see them during these couple of weeks before they actually come back in January to start the new session on January 5th and to say, listen, we may not have a lot to agree with, but you may think the policies on climate or immigration or whatever should be different, but I bet we agree that Congress should decide those.
Right.
And that those should not be locked in forever via trade agreement. So commit to me.
Yeah, these
will not give away your authority.
These are one of those this is one of those issues that Ralph Nader wrote about in his new book Unstoppable, where he said there's 27 issues that Tea Partiers and progressives can agree on. Increasingly. You're seeing this as a bipartisan opposition.
Well, it's interesting. There's going to be a fight within the Republican Party because the sort of Wall Street, K Street wing of the Republican Party, of course, is going to want to do what the Chamber of Commerce wants, which is as a first thing to do right away in January. We're going to see this come fast. Folks need to be ready. It's no joke that you need to talk to your members of the House of Representatives between now and January. They want right away for the Congress to use its new authority, the Republicans, to give President Obama fast-track authority. And then you've got freshmen and sophomore members, but also some more senior House members, Republicans, who are nervous about a primary from the right. And they've got to think about, is that really what they want to do with their majority? And already some of the really conservative websites and commentators have started to talk about what a mistake it would be to do that.
Great. Very, very interesting. We live in interesting times, Larry. It's remarkable. The executive director of Global Trade Watch, author of The Rise and Fall of Fast Track Trade Authority, the website citizen.org/trade, Lori Wallach. Lori, thank you so much for dropping by today. And my apologies again for my the hiccup on the service. We'll be right back. It's quarter after.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And don't forget, the Hunter School, 603-786-2922. 603-786-2922. Welcome back. 15 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you and Jonathan in Spencer, West Virginia. Hey, Jonathan, thanks for watching Free Speech TV on Dish Network. What's up?
Hello, Tom. Thank you. I'm actually glad to hear about President Obama's statement and your condition to, was it the FCC?
Yeah, the Federal Communications Commission, yeah.
Whether that actually has followed through on that, if not, we can all hope so. But I've called in a real issue about that. Hopefully it probably ties in together with that. And this availability of internet access in certain areas, such as where I live in Spencer, West Virginia, yeah. And probably most of the areas in West Virginia, in the state, probably many people probably aware that in West Virginia there's lack of access to internet in
yeah.
certain areas.
So well, it's, and it's not just rural areas. I was talking with a friend of mine over the weekend who lives in Detroit, and he said only 40% of Detroiters have access to broadband.
Yeah, and honestly, it's the providers that are regulating this access in certain areas. Honestly, I think if it was passed and it becomes a utility, then it's not going to be so much profit driven.
Right.
And who would they provide service to?
Right.
And if it was provided as a utility, such as,
Well, it should be a utility. I mean, this is a public good. This was invented by our government.
Correct in saying that it is part of everybody, many people's life as a necessity, as needed. As some people depend on it for their employment, their jobs, and school, and education.
I'm with you, Jordan or Jonathan, rather. Thank you for the call and for your comments, Corky in Rochester, New York. Hey, Corky, thanks for watching Free Speech TV.
Hello, Tom.
What's on your mind today?
Yeah, it looks like Democrats haven't figured out how to get a hold of the message.
Mm-hmm.
The Republicans started taking the message in January, and the Democrats kept defending it instead of going after, like you say, the things we've done. Kids on insurance till 26. Obama's health care plan. All the other things that he's done.
Yeah.
And the Democrats did not take the narrative back. So all they were doing the whole election was defending the allegations that were being thrown at them.
Right. Defending against them, yeah. And they're really, the other thing is that there's a very, very well-established, well-funded, and with a significant throw, a significant reach, right-wing media infrastructure in the United States, Fox News and all the right-wing radio programs. And there's really no analog of that on the left. I mean, we've got Free Speech TV, and we've got, a few radio stations, Pacifica, and a few commercial
Frank
radio
Luntz
stations.
Frank Luntz took the narrative. He showed these people how to talk to middle-class Americans, which I've been trying to tell you.
Yeah.
Is you can't talk. You have to talk to them in code.
Yep.
Code that they understand.
Yep.
You ever go to a seminar where somebody's trying to show you how to sell something?
Mm-hmm.
And then you got to close the deal.
Right.
That's what Frank Luntz does. He trains. He's a snake oil salesman training people to sell things that they don't really need.
Yeah. Yeah. Or that people don't really want, actually. Corky, thank you for the call. Well said. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV. We'll be right back. It's 20 minutes past the hour. Howard Dean said it so right. He said, you cannot win if you are afraid. Biggest problem was message in this election. Yeah, this is Howard Dean. He says, the Republican message was, we're not Obama. which has no substance, but people understand it, then the Democrats' message, oh, we're not Obama either. That is stupid. And how, speaking of stupid, they've found a virus that infects human brains and makes us stupid. It's called the algae virus. It's never been observed in healthy people before. It affects cognitive function, including visual processing and spatial awareness. And surprisingly, this from The Independent, the British newspaper. Louise says it's from watching too much Fox. Surprisingly, the researchers found DNA in the throats of healthy individuals that match the DNA of a virus known to infect green algae. Now, green algae is growing in our waterways because of all the runoff fertilizer from our factory farms. So is this another, I mean, factory farms have brought us E. coli, they've brought us salmonella, they might have brought us prion disease, maybe even Alzheimer's, who knows, certainly mad cow disease. Have they also brought us the algae virus that makes people more stupid? Of the 90 participants in the study, 40 tested positive for the algae virus, and those who tested positive performed worse on tests designed to measure the speed and accuracy of visual processing. They also achieved lower scores in tests designed to measure attention. A virus? Really? The other thing I wanted to mention, and just kind of bring it up for conversation, for what it's worth, is when I flew out to Denver on Saturday morning, the gate agent said, we'd like to board people with disabilities and service members, active duty service members. Now, sometimes they say active duty service members in uniform, and sometimes they just say active duty service members. And she got about 10 people who walked through and showed military ID. None of them were in uniform. And it just occurred to me, what kind of message are we sending? Are we saying that we're going to fetishize the military? You stand head and shoulders above the rest of America, and therefore you get to board first? Or are we saying, because we pay you so poorly and you have been good enough to go off and fight and die in stupid wars for which there was no purpose? It's been 60 years since we actually fought a war for freedom, right? World War II. Are we saying that, you know, we've been, you know, killing you off, so we're going to throw you a bone? When they combine, when they say disabled people and the military, is that a diss? Are they saying, you know, people, you know, and then here, if you really want to honor the veteran, I got this email from Patrick Murphy, who's a former member of Congress, former veteran, who has now become a pretty outspoken spokesperson for our nation's veterans. And he says, 1 in 10 troops takes out high interest loans in order to make ends meet. As an Army veteran and former congressman, I know how important it is to protect service members against predatory lending practices. He wants to pass a bill called the Military Lending Act, and he's asking for people to get on board with this. But hey, as long as the banksters can make a profit off the military, the Republicans will be in support of anything that hurts the military in exchange for profits. So good luck with that. But what does this say? When we start giving our service members essentially high status or preferential treatment in boarding aircraft, and I don't know what other areas the same thing is happening, but you know, what does this say? It's pretty bizarre to me. Sue Nethercutt. Sue is on the line with us. She runs our chat rooms, does our newsletter out of the UK. Sue, I don't know if you wanted me to out you that way.
Well, it's a bit late now, isn't it, Tom?
My apologies.
No problems.
Are you? Do you still want to talk about your topic?
Yeah, I could not let what your guest in the last hour said, Dr. George, about the British National Health Service go. I mean, basically, she was talking as though the American system was superior and that we let people die.
Yeah. In fact, she said that you're encouraging people to die. Euthanasia, that's intentionally killing people.
Well, there have been quite a few court cases of people who have been asked to die, or they've asked that their loved ones will not be prosecuted for taking them over to the Netherlands, where there is a facility where people can commit suicide because of serious illness.
Yeah, in Holland and Switzerland.
You know, the cases have been lost, you know.
Yeah.
So absolutely not.
Absolutely not.
But having had many elderly relatives or very sick relatives looked after the health by the health service very well, there is no way that there was any encouragement for them to die. On the contrary, they did the very best to keep them alive and as comfortable as possible for as long as possible.
Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing the perspective from the UK. I'm guessing probably any British citizen would be rather offended by an American right-winger saying that their medical system is killing people.
Correct.
Yeah.
And the statistics as well. If you compare our death, I mean, from what I hear, I've not looked at them recently, but if you compare our statistics with yours, I think ours, for most things, would stand up better.
The UK has better outcomes in most areas.
Yeah.
In terms of health, in terms of longevity, in terms of infant mortality, and all these things. Is there, you know, in this post-Tony Blair world, is there now pressure to, and now you've got a conservative government, to dial back the National Health Service?
Well, the government says that they're spending more and more, and others are saying that they aren't, so it's a bit difficult to tell exactly what's going on. Mm-hmm. There's certainly this pressure, you know, pressure to privatize a bit more, and have done a bit in that direction. Which,
yeah. Is David Cameron pushing for that?
Not too bad, but I think if it keeps on going, it's not going to be good.
Yeah, okay.
This is when my sister was ill last a couple of years ago.
Right.
There were so many different groups that had, you know, private as well as government, that had to be roped in for her health care. That we spent all the time having conferences.
Remarkable. Sue, we got to run. But thank you so much, Sue, for calling in and sharing this. We'll be back. It's 28 minutes past.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And the phone number for Hunter School to make a contribution to help out this year, your holiday gift this year, 603-786-2922. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And... remarkable. Just a quick reminder, we are doing our holiday fundraiser for the Hunter School and the New England Salem Children's Village. And hunterschool.org is the website if you want to learn all about it. It is an extraordinary program. It's a small program that has presented a model that where other programs all around the country come to see what's going on here. How does it work? How do you deal? How do you work with kids who are so neurologically challenged, Asperger's, ADHD, autism. How do you work with kids who are so neurologically challenged that they can't make it in public school? They can't make it in a normal family. These are the kids that we're working with, and it's just remarkable what's being done there. So if this is our holiday fundraiser, if you would like to give a gift in a friend's name, if you'd like to give a gift in the name of our show, whatever it may be, please call them now. 603-786-2922. 603-786-2922. Jeff in Berwyn, Illinois. Hey, Jeff, welcome to the program. What's up?
Greetings, Tom. I would like to go back to a topic that you mentioned in the last hour about the health insurance companies.
Sure.
Now, I have to tell you, you know me. We know each other. I'm an anarcho-capitalist libertarian.
Uh-huh.
But I have a real big problem with crony capitalism. And there's a big distinction. But I digress. The problem with for-profit health insurance companies is they need to make markets for profits. And as all businesses do, they need to make markets or expand on the markets they already have. So why would a health insurance company have a motivation to reduce sickness in this country? They don't.
No, actually they do, because if they reduce sickness, they reduce their expenses.
But they still stiff their policyholders.
I get that. But this is one of the reasons why they pay for preventative health care, is because it's a hell of a lot less expensive to deal with stage 1 cancer than stage 3 cancer.
Yeah. Unfortunately, they pay for technologies that are going to kill the people anyway.
Well, not always. It's a lot cheaper to treat high blood pressure than it is to treat a stroke or a heart attack.
Okay. Well, I guess my point being is I think that for-profit health insurance companies should not be allowed, even though I am a...
I agree. I agree.
How could anybody justify paying a CEO of a health insurance company, $500 million?
A billion. Stephen J. Hemsley has made over $1 billion.
That is mind-boggling.
Yeah, just in health insurance. And the guy before him, Dollar Bill McGuire, made $1.7 billion. I mean, you know, and this is just United Healthcare. I mean, this is just, you know, and they made an awful lot of it, of course, on Medicare Advantage plans, which is, you know, another gift to the health insurance companies from the Republican Party. It dates back to the Reagan era. So, Jeff, I'm with you. Thank you for the call and for the point you made. Gene in Amosville, Virginia. Am I saying that right, Gene?
Sure. Well, that's close enough. Amosville.
Ames. Okay.
Eric Cantor's old district.
Oh. Okay. Yeah. So you're reading Dan Sisson's book, The American Revolution of 1800?
Yes, sir, I am. And by the way, I have to thank you for everything you do. You're so educational to me.
Well, thank you.
Insightful.
We're gonna get Dan back on this week. We're doing this every week for a while here, our Tom Hartman University book club. So, stay tuned. So you had a question or thoughts on Dan's book?
Well, this is probably a lead to a question, but let me give you my thought. Reading the book, I found it kind of a slow read because, you know, the founding fathers, when he quotes them, they're every sentence, every word they use is careful and nuanced.
Yeah.
And I have to reread it a lot. But that said, the takeaway is it seems to be there a broad agreement among those guys that they didn't like party or faction, by and large.
Right.
But they saw it as inevitable, that they just couldn't stop it.
Right.
And John Adams actually seemed to be really almost crystal ball-like. He saw, because of our electoral college system, that voting, that is going to inevitably be two parties. You know, Jefferson would have liked no party, which is one party. But, so we have two parties. And it's sort of debatable as to whether they have become factions.
Let me just differentiate for people who don't know what you and I are talking about. In Dan Sisson's book, The American Revolution of 1800, he takes us back. Madison said it very clearly in Federalist Number 10, that a faction, most Americans don't know what a faction is. A faction, they think it's just, you know, a fragment of a group. You know, there's the pro-gun faction and the anti-gun faction or something like that. But that's actually maybe a colloquial use of the term. But in the context of 1787, what they meant, and in the era, what they meant when they said faction was a group of people whose interests are adverse, whose interests are, and I believe that's the word that Madison used in correct me if I'm wrong, whose interests are adverse, in other words, opposed or work to the disadvantage of society as a whole, of we the people.
They all said that. Washington, Jefferson, they all were in agreement with that thought.
Yeah. So, in fact, one of the worst things you could accuse a politician of back in the founding era was being a member of a faction or being, favorable to or favored by a faction. Because factions were seen as literally the thing that would destroy the republic. And I would say to you that all of these Koch brothers enterprises are all factions.
I'd like to go beyond that, though. I'm looking at both parties, the Democratic Party and the Republican Party, and it could be argued that they have become faction.
Yes.
You know, more debatable, the Democratic Party, but I don't think there's any denying that the Republican Party as a whole body is faction, and included in that, I would call the Supreme Court Five part of that faction.
I agree.
And so by saying that, this jumps to another subject that you talked about, the Supreme Court doing, you know, constitutional review of legislative law is wrong. It's not part of their described duties in the, I guess.
No, it's not one of their enumerated powers, as you say. It's not in the Constitution.
Yeah,
you're right.
Exactly. But then on the flip side of that, devil's advocate's kind of thing, J. Jefferson, you know, when asked about that, because he was infuriated about it, he said it has to be done with the people, and the people voting basically every 2 years with the House of Representatives.
Right.
But the House of Representatives has become, it's not the people's house anymore. You know, with computerized redistricting, we no longer have the people's voice in the House. And
yeah, so Democrats got millions more votes than Republicans did in the last senatorial election, although the Republican senators got elected. That wasn't so much redistricting as just the vagaries of red state, blue state. In other words, the fact that you've got, like, California only has two senators, and although neither of them were up for reelection, but in big states and small states. But at the level of the House of Representatives, we're going to have an absolutely 100% Republican House for at least another 6 years.
Oh, at the very least.
Yeah.
But what I'm getting at is because the House essentially now, because it's so controlled by, corporate Republicans, you talked about the Koch brothers, all of them are in the same faction now.
It's
big doll. And it seems at times almost insurmountable. And I don't believe the founding fathers really found a way to address. They had to keep it, party, subdued enough that it didn't become faction. And there was no tools, even in their minds, that I can, unless I haven't found it in Sussman's book. Maybe he's got it. I don't know. But I haven't completed the book yet. As I said,
no, and that's a question I asked Dan, but to the best of my knowledge, they didn't have any tools. The one advantage that they had was it wasn't until 1799 that the first American, now there were very wealthy people in North America prior to the Revolutionary War. Virtually all of them fled. They went to either Canada or back to the United Kingdom. And so we were left with sort of a middle class and poor America. And it wasn't until 1799 that the first American made in today's dollars would be $1 million, which isn't all that much, really, in the grand scale, compared to the Koch brothers with $80 billion.
Exactly.
So by and large, the way that they dealt with faction back then was, nobody was rich enough to really be a serious, incredible faction that could challenge the power of the government itself. And Jefferson talked about, should a group using money, he was talking about the wealthy, ever acquire so much wealth that they challenge the government, that they represented a threat to democratic institutions, they should be taxed, and the taxes should increase geometrically, he said.
Yes, right.
This is what Thomas Jefferson said, for goodness sakes.
Yeah, right. But, Washington, on his, I guess it was his one of his last speeches or last one, mentioned that, almost saying that good men are going to be corrupted by faction.
Right.
Inevitably.
Right.
And the Constitution, this is a little bit, going left with all of this, but was written with so much sort of vagueness in order to get it passed, but also to be flexible for the future. Jefferson talking about the generation that dies off should not be controlling the generation that is alive today.
Yeah. Excellent point, Gene. Gene, thank you very much for the call, and thanks for reading the book. We'll be back. It's 15 minutes before the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Today we start our holiday fundraiser for the Hunter School. HunterSchool.org or 603-786-2922. Welcome back. Tom in Holyoke, Colorado, watching Free Speech TV. Hey, Tom, what's up?
Hey there, Tom. Well, I was wondering if these climate deniers have seen such good success with the Republican politicians lying and denying and changing policy and making new laws by deceit and just changing the facts, that they could actually, inside themselves, feel they could fix the climate by lying about it, denying it, and telling everyone it doesn't exist, it'll go away.
I don't think that they think that they can deny it into fixing it. I think that what they're doing basically is taking the money and running. It's you've got the oil industry and the oil barons, from the Koch brothers to ExxonMobil, who are just interested in getting the last little bit of carbon out of the ground as much as they possibly can, converting it to cash, And then you've got a whole industry of paid shills, and the Republican Party has by and large become a wholly owned subsidiary of that industry, where they're just paid very well to take these positions, and they know which side their bread is buttered on. So they're going to, I mean, we had a panel on the TV show on RT last Friday night, where I had two conservatives, and both of them denying climate change. I mean, this is what you have to do if you get a paycheck that's coming directly or indirectly from the Koch brothers or other big oil industries.
So they may, in fact, be able to look out the window today and see that we're having problems
right.
in lower latitudes now and different weather patterns for the climate, and they would rather take the short-term money than to do something to change the way the Earth is going.
That's my opinion, yes. Yes, it's all about... And when you consider, I mean, there's a lot of, it's tough to get a good job in America right now. It's seriously tough to get a good job right now. Only about a third of Americans, working Americans, can actually support their families without going into debt, and which is a startling statistic. And so if somebody comes along and says, hey, you want to make $50,000, $70,000, $100,000, $150,000 a year, all you got to do is take all these Republican positions. There's no shortage of people who will say, yeah, you know, I need the money. My family needs the money. I'll take those positions for a while. I mean, it's what was it? Mark Twain's, I think, or I forget who it was, who the famous quote about how, you know, a man's paycheck influences his opinions.
Huh. So. Well, I just would love their great-great-grandchildren to be able to go do something on their grave.
If they have great-great-grandchildren, I mean, this is the you got people like Guy McPherson running around saying, we have 40 years, and that's it.
Wow.
Yeah. Now, I'm not I disagree with him, but I think that we have 10 or 15 years to get it right, or that's it, and maybe 20 at the outside, and that's what I'm hearing from people like Michael Mann and you know, who wrote about a great piece on this in Scientific American. And I don't think that we're past the point of no return like Guy McPherson does, but I think we're too damn close to it to have anything other than a really, really rapid response. Tom, thanks for the call. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV. We'll be right back. It's 10 minutes before the hour. Before the hour, welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Judy Julin is with us. She lives and works at the Hunter School and is calling to tell us what's going on up there. Judy, welcome.
Hi, Tom. It's great to be here. How are you?
I am great, but I'll get better. How's everything at Hunter School?
Wonderful. It's crisp and clear, and the kids are enjoying the pre-winter days, and everything's great up here. Thanks.
That's great. That's great. So we're doing this fundraiser this week for our holiday fundraiser for Hunter School. The number to call is 603-786-2922, 603-786-2922. And Jim will put that up on the screen and keep it up there throughout this. And Judy Julin, tell us why somebody should help out the Hunter School. Tell us what you're up to up there.
Well, I'll tell you, Tom, these kids today are so phenomenal and so a curiosity to many of us in their wonderful ways of being in the world, and especially the kids at the Hunter School. You know, since I've been there in August, these kids are really, really thriving in many, many respects in this wonderful environment that's all about, you know, really the solemn philosophies and permaculture and being mindful of what's going on in the world. So why send your kid there? It's really, you know, gets down to, it's infused with love. It's got principles that have been going strong for many, many years. And quite frankly, the media is starting to see Lisa Ling and a recurrence on Oprah, what's going on with these kids. It's the one-on-one connection. It's the heart-centeredness. It's the commitment to consistency. And, of course, they're surrounded by nature and wonderful surroundings.
Yeah, this is, we're on a little over 100 acres of land up on a 2,000-acre lake in the mountains of New Hampshire. It's an absolutely beautiful and idyllic spot, and it works so well for these kids who, in virtually every case, could not function in public schools and in most cases couldn't even function in their homes and with their families. And kids on the autistic spectrum, by and large, and with ADHD and Hunter School, they're not only functioning and working well, but many of them are graduating back into the normal world and doing very well. In fact, we had a Hunter School parent call earlier today to say that her son is now the top chef. You know, he's gone off to chef school. So the number is 603-786-2922. With a $100 contribution, you can get a Be the Light t-shirt or a Be the Light umbrella. The website is hunterschool.org. Julie, tell me about permaculture.
It was really exciting.
Excuse me, Judy.
Judy Julin. It was really exciting, Tom, this year to be a part of the new wave of permaculture at Hunter School, which not only resulted in new ways of cultivating the land and thinking about the future and working with nature and the children, but it was also about being a part of launching the Hunter School farm stand. It was really fantastic, and the kids got involved 100%. We actually integrated it into the academic curriculum with the chemistry behind baking apple pies and the mathematics of accounting, taking money at the farm stand. It was really great for me, Tom, to see the kids working together to actually make the apple pies. These kids that perhaps had a hard time functioning in their school or at home with extreme behavioral issues, it was so heartwarming for me to see them come together in their own little community for their own little business. It was really fun.
That's great. And, Judy, any stories you want to tell us about any of the kids there that where you have the permission of the parents to share their story with our audience? Very quickly, our phone number, the phone number for Hunter School to make a donation, 603-786-2922. Back to you, Judy.
Tom, you know, there's so many stories about so many parents, and each one is particular and charming and quite tender in its own way. There's a couple of them that, with the children, not certainly mentioning any names, but one of the newer children that came that was from perhaps a different culture, a different heritage, that when he was coming together and actually making the apple pies, he really, really, a sweetness and an openness. It was kind of like he was really safe in the environment, and I think that's a big part of the Hunter School, that these kids actually feel safe. And there's very little bullying there. So when they were working together to actually, you know, cut the apples, you know, we had an apple core, an old-fashioned apple peeler and core, and they were taking turns, and there was one that became the leader. So they actually started to mirror those things that would be done in a real business or, a nonprofit school that was perhaps traditional, and they're doing it in the Hunter School way with the mindfulness principles and the respect of nature with the apples and the baking of the trees. And it really, another great thing was how the community came out to support the school at the farm stand with the kids as the salespeople and taking money and doing accounting at the end of the day. So really from beginning to end, the farm school with the kids that might not ever have had an opportunity to be in public that way or to work together to figure out how to market something that they've made, their own craft.
Right.
Each child was absolutely incredible. They really loved it, and so did the parents.
We have just a minute left. The phone number is 603-786-2922 to make a contribution to the Hunter School. Any amount that you can give is much appreciated. With a $100 donation, they'll send you a Be the Light t-shirt or a Be the Light umbrella, your choice. And Judy, in the little less than a minute we have left, what is mindfulness? Tell us what you're teaching the kids.
Well, you know, mindfulness is kind of like a buzzword these days, Tom. It's really very simply being present in the moment. What I love about what Hunter School does, energetic mindfulness, just a little bit of a tweak, a little bit of a difference, is really being aware and mindful, not only in the moment, but how your thoughts, your behaviors, and your emotions impact the world around us. So it's really about slowing down, paying attention, and really feeling that interconnectedness, which is really nice because it's like being, it's the oneness, it's the concept of oneness, and these kids are really getting it, as are the house parents and the teachers here.
That's great. Judy Julin with the Hunter School, the telephone number 603-786-2922 to help out. Please make a contribution, your holiday contribution now. Thank you, Judy.
Thanks a lot, Tom. Take care.
Great talking with you. And thanks so much to you for being with us this Monday. We'll be back tomorrow. And don't forget, democracy is not a spectator sport. It does require your participation. You got to show up. You got to be there. So it just, you know, it's not enough just to vote. It takes all of us. Peg, you're it. See you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to TomHartman.com.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.